Welcome to WFHR's Director's Cut, session 48.
Yes, it's 48. So, yes. You're right. Yeah.
Your host and program director here, James J. Maloff, with my partner in art, our head of production, Seth Habegger.
Hey, everyone. This is a start of a kind of a new series we're doing for Director's Cut, an off and on thing. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah. With this show, we're kicking off the Civic series as an idea of mine and Seth's to give you out there a chance to better know our Civic Media family. We ask you, the best listeners in radio, to welcome to the WFHR stage from Matinair on the Air, the amazing Gene Matinair. And we're going to be talking with Greg Bacher, wonderful sidekick, in just a little bit. You can hear Matinair on the Air Monday through Friday, 10 to noon, right here at WFHR. Jane, thanks for joining us.
I am delighted to be here.
I should journalistically mention that right away, two of my favorite voices in radio are Jane and Greg. So I just want to start out right away letting the audience know that I am not going to have a lot of integrity with this interview. Just big fans of you guys, love what you guys do, and appreciate you taking the time to be able to join us. Jane, I always like to start off asking people their origin story. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're from and how you got to this place?
Absolutely. I was born in Hartford, Wisconsin. I was the youngest of six children. Our father was a mortician. We grew up upstairs. It was a tough sell getting kids to come over for sleepovers. But I managed my way through. I was always, one of the things that we did as kids, we used to put on plays on Christmas Eve to keep ourselves entertained as mom and dad were wrapping the presents upstairs. So I think that kind of set me on my path to be a performer. The other thing that I credit with my love for, I don't know, making people laugh, essentially, I was about 4 years old. We were all at Sunday Mass. And there was it was a particular service in which at one point the priest says, "Let us rise, let us stand, let us sit." And as he does that, the entire congregation follows along. And I was curious, and I said to my mother quite loudly, apparently at one point, "Why doesn't he make up his mind?" And the entire congregation burst out laughing. And I thought, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. I don't know what I did other than ask a reasonable question, and I got this great response. So ever since then, you guys, I've kind of been chasing the laughs, I think.
I can relate to that on so many levels. It's always interesting to me to hear any creative, any person in the creative arts and where they first got that chase, where it first started. I know for me, it was making my mother laugh. I would do a Morty. I would do, you know, we're a proud Jewish family, so I would do Morty. And I was 7 years old doing this voice and making her laugh. Or my favorite joke that I've ever told to my Nana was, "Nana, you know, because we're also a very proud Italian family. Nana, do you want to know how you can tell if somebody's Italian? Italian. Wait a minute, they'll tell you." It's just little things that we find early on in life that give us this taste of what we are chasing and what we want. Right there, that kind of told you early on, whether subconsciously or not, that this is something I want to be a part of. So how did you go from that to getting into radio?
Well, I was a theater major when I started out in college. And again, my father, a mortician, a very practical man, did not necessarily think that acting was a secure profession, shall we say. Mm-hmm. So when I told him I wanted to go to school for theater, he said, "Well, Jane, maybe you should have a backup plan." And so I doubled that with a communications degree. Unfortunately, I was a big fish in a very little pond. In my hometown, I was in all the high school plays or most of the high school plays. And when I got to University of Minnesota, which is a huge school, I had never ridden a public bus before. I was afraid of everything. So when I got to some auditions, I was very, very intimidated by the level of actors who were coming out for those things. And that's when I decided to transition more to communications and then ultimately towards radio, because to me, radio has always been, at least back in the good old days before everyone could see you, it was the theater of the mind. And right. So I could be anything to anybody. I could do an accent. I could do a voice. I could do whatever. And the listener would then put whatever picture in their head to go with whatever character I was, and that really, really appealed to me.
Hmm. And it's a natural progression, I think, to go to that, but it's also unique. Everybody's journey to that is a little unique. I want to go back for a second, if you don't mind. You mentioned your father, the mortician. We actually have a little experience with that here at WFHR. Our old owner was actually an old mortician for many, many years, Marcus and everything. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about that actually before with that as a combination with radio. But I am kind of curious, because you mentioned hearing that laughter for the first time and some of these things. One of the things that I enjoy about you, Jane, and people like us, as far as having a, I don't want to say a darker sense of humor, but a darker sense of humor. Do you think that part of that stemmed from that, or just to kind of it just happened? You were always going to be that way.
Oh no, there was definitely an influence growing up in a funeral family, because you do tend to have a darker view of some things and a different perspective on some things. Last year, one of my brothers became very sick, and as he was in the hospital and we were talking about making final arrangements, he said, "I want the cheapest cremation possible." And I said, "Charlie, I don't think they're on a sliding scale. I think it's kind of, one size, maybe not, but kind of fits all." And then he said, "I want you to get the cheapest urn you can find. It's like, okay, I got my marching orders. So after he passed, I went online to find an urn for him. This was 6 months ago. I am still getting advertisements for urns every time I go to a website. It's like Urn World. And all I can think of is, how many do you think I need at one time? Do you buy them in bulk? Should he have one for every day of the week? I'm not sure how other people do this, but I told that story at his memorial service, and we all howled, because that's just so our family.
Mm-hmm. It's
nice.
With there's so much, everybody is going to experience some difficult times, and I really think that laughter is the one thing that gets us through so much of it. So I think that everybody in some ways has a little bit of a similar sense of humor to the three of us, but I think that it's also noteworthy when you can share those kind of things, and I really appreciate you sharing that. We feel for you and yours, Jane. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Oh, absolutely. And again, as you said, we all go through difficult periods. Everyone deals with it differently. My sense of humor isn't necessarily everyone's, piece of pie, but I do try to be sensitive to other people who are going through tough times. That just tends to be my coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm. So I can relate to that.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Jane Matinair from Matinair on the Air. Jane, what about influences? Who are the people that have influenced you the most, whether it's entertainment-wise, radio-wise, or just in life?
Oh, my. Carol Burnett, Betty White.
Nice.
Bea Arthur. The Carol Burnett show was life-changing for me. In the ensemble that they put together, and how well that group of actors worked off of each other and played off of each other. And I think that that's something that I've always wanted, that kind of camaraderie. When you're in the creative process, it just makes it so much more fun. And if you have the same comic sensibilities, there's nothing better than that. It just feels fantastic.
Mm. I would say my earliest influences, Second City Television, SNL, and the Carol Burnett Show. I could not tell you how much those shows, because not only them being live, And so much of this, what they would do sketch-wise, were live at least. But with that particular one, the Carol Burnett Show, it wasn't just that they had elite talent on that show, but to your point, the chemistry. They were able to build a chemistry that those other shows really weren't able to, because of cast members leaving and coming and going and a lot of that. And I think that, too, with SNL, with Second City, you had people usually just starting out. These were established careers already. These were people who had really fine-toned their comedic talents to the point where they were so good at this, and I think about this from time to time, they were so good at this that they would rehearse and rehearse, and then we'd see them live, and they would still break. They could still make Carol laugh, or still make Tim Conway laugh, or something
Harvey
like
Korman.
Harvey
Korman.
Harvey's.
I think Tim Conway's mission in life was to make Harvey Korman break up.
Absolutely. You could not convince me otherwise.
And whenever I'm really, really down, you guys, I will watch the elephant sketch.
Oh, yes.
On YouTube with Tim. That is still one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my entire life.
Snork.
It's just, yeah, snork. Oh, snorkel.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's so funny. Oh, and I would be remiss if I didn't, and I know I'm older than you guys, but if I didn't mention Phyllis Diller. I had never seen anyone like Phyllis Diller because I didn't know women could do that. I didn't know women could stand up and make jokes about their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
Or she was groundbreaking, not just in the way that she looked, but in the things that she addressed. And, yeah, she had a big influence on me, too.
There's
Fang. Yes.
Fang.
There were some really trailblazers in that industry when it comes to that. I think Joan Rivers is a great one as well. But Phyllis Diller doesn't get her due. I'm so glad you brought her up. She doesn't get her due nearly enough. That's a great one to mention.
Well, there would be no Joan Rivers without Phyllis.
That's
right,
true.
Right,
very
exactly.
true, yeah.
Yes, oh, very true, yeah. So you kind of told us, Jane, a little bit of when you knew that you wanted to make people laugh. You wanted to entertain people in some way or another. With your time in radio, when did you know, or are you still trying to find out that this is where you belong, that you should be here, at least at this point in time and everything?
Well, I've been doing this now for 42 years, you guys. I am no longer qualified for anything else. I have no marketable skills. I've managed to find a way to get paid by having a smart mouth for a really long time, and there just aren't a lot of jobs that call for that.
It's a good point. You know, I'm in the same boat.
Radio is perfect.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
It's right. I honestly don't know what else I would do. I never wanted to be on TV. That didn't appeal to me. Too much pressure on looks and appearance. And I've just always been more about finding things to celebrate that we share in common, pointing out problems on both sides, educating, informing. And one of the best ways I know how to do that is by making people laugh.
Jane, you've mentioned sometimes on your show, you know, what you have done throughout the years in radio. And it sounds like you've done just about everything you can do, at least on the air on radio. You've done news, you've done DJ, you've done all that stuff. So is there any particular one you've enjoyed more than the other?
Well, the one thing I really wanted to be, you guys, when I first started out, was I wanted, because there weren't that many women in radio when I started in 1981, and really the only place you would hear women at that point, they were the cool rock chick from 7 to midnight. That was where the women were, and I thought, well, I want to be that. Unfortunately, I was neither cool nor a rock chick, and ultimately, the general manager heard me doing the overnight shift, and he moved me to mornings. And there I had a partner. I had numerous partners, but that was a lot more freeing. You didn't just have 20 seconds of the ramp of a song to say something. Mm-hmm. We would chat in between songs. We would do bits. We would make up parody songs and parody things, and so that really became my home, and I spent the vast majority of my career doing morning radio.
Nice.
Yeah. Gene, I'm curious, with the work that you've done, and as Seth touched on there, the amount of different types of work you've done, do you enjoy working solo? Do you enjoy collaborating with somebody? Is there a style that you like more?
I love the format that I have with Greg and with Calvin right now during our show, Matt and Air on Air. Because I spent so much time in music radio where you only had like 90 seconds to make your point, I'm really intimidated by having 15 minutes that I have to fill myself.
Yeah.
It's a lot of time. People don't appreciate how long that is when you are the only one who is speaking. So I find it a lot more interesting to have someone to interact with, to have someone to play off of, and it's also a way to get different perspectives because if everyone agrees on everything all the time, it's kind of boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Jane, do you have any other creative outlets? You know, I always like asking our guests this because it's something that I noted when I was young. Miles Davis, late in life, got into painting and became a great painter. There's other creatives like finding different outlets, different ways to get out their creativity. Do you have other things that you like doing?
I used to love to garden, you guys. And now that we've been in our house for 23 years, I was very, very ambitious with the number of flower beds that we put in 23 years ago. Now I'm 23 years older, and I wish I just could concrete over all of them. It would make life so much easier. We don't have a dog anymore. We lost our dog about 2 years ago. I can't go through that again. Mm. I applaud people who are able to say goodbye. But I love the Humane Society. I love those kinds of organizations. My husband and I are big travelers. So every year we take a pretty big trip overseas, and that's what we spend a lot of time doing. And I do see my siblings, and I'm trying to learn. You know, again, my husband and I have been married for 23 years. I'm still trying not to poison him. So cooking is not my natural arena. So, but I do work on that as well.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, those are great.
I like that. Yeah,
no, those are great.
And also for years and years, guys, I did do community theater. And I wrote a couple one-woman shows. I did that for a long time. Ultimately, the hours just, you know, when I was getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, it was impossible to continue doing community theater. I couldn't stay awake during the rehearsals. So that's just something I've kind of gotten away from in the last 10 years.
Our station is built on community theater.
Shockingly, it is.
Whether it was my experience really that got me into this gig 20-some years ago or whatever, or meeting Seth and Melissa through theater and getting them to, you know, asking them to join us here. Jane, I just a couple more questions. We'll let you go. You and I have both worked, and many out there in radio land have worked for a lot of different companies. It's just kind of a thing in radio. Very few of us are like Pam over here at WFHR, where she's been at the same station for 40-some years.
Right.
But even for Pam, WFHR has changed ownership many times. Not speaking for you, certainly, but I know that it means something different working for Civic Media. And I didn't quite get that right away. I've been through the ringer. We had just, our station had been sold not even like a blink of an eye before Civic took over. So we were kind of had a little PTSD, to be honest with you, about being taken over by a new company. And okay, well, what are they selling us? What are they going to do? And the first thing they did was hand us insurance papers. Which had a double factor to it. It gave us not only a confirmation that our people were sticking around, but it also showed us right away where they stand and what they mean. And as the time has gone on, we've learned more and more of that message and how much we are supporters of democracy. We are supportive of freedom, of facts. And working for this company is a little bit different than working for your normal or a lot of this, quite frankly, a lot of the stations that are around, not only in our area, but around the country. So what does it mean for you to work for Civic?
After all of my years in this business, I finally feel like I have found my home. Mm. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. And everything you just said about the Civic Media mission of protecting democracy, bringing you accurate information, and the ability for all of us to learn together, and that's something that Greg and I try to do on Matt and Air on Air, is all the things in our backyard that we have never experienced or done or highlighted. It is a unique company. There is no question about it. There's just no question about it. And I think the spirit of collaboration within the Civic Media is fantastic. In some other companies, there might be jealousies, there might be competition, you know, in internal competitions. Mm-hmm. And I think for the most part, we all very much agree with the mission of Civic Media. And I cannot express enough the value and the satisfaction I get from working for this company and how grateful I am for this opportunity at what is likely going to be, you know, the last job of my career.
Well said.
Yeah, very well. And I couldn't agree with you more, Jane. I'll just piggyback on that and add that we've also, thanks to Civic, we've gotten to work with and get to meet people like you.
Yeah.
And that's another added bonus of it. We really appreciate your final question, Jane. Oh, go ahead.
I just want to say, I feel the same way about you guys. I feel the same way about all across Civic Media. We have some of the most passionate, fantastic, dedicated people, and it's a really good feeling.
Yep. Your final question, Jane, and then you can go ahead and go on with the rest of your day. we like to ask every one of our guests this question. If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
We always get that reaction.
We get the hardball questions here at Director's Cut. Hardball questions.
George Carlin would be one of them.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Betty White would be another one.
Mm, that'd be a good one.
Genghis Khan? No, I'm kidding.
Oh, that's nice, nice.
That coffee may not last long. Okay, off with her head. Oh.
But it's like my other idols, Mary Tyler Moore, Valerie Harper. So many of those early comedians had such a big influence on me, and I think it would be so interesting to hear about their struggles in order to get to the point where they got. Yeah. And some of those struggles still remain. So we can all learn from each other on that, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Long line of fabulous women, I got to say. Yeah.
Excellent answer, Jane. And excellent time talking with you. We appreciate you so very much. You might have to join us again sometime, though, because there are some follow-ups I have a little bit later. But we really appreciate the time, Jane. Thanks so much for joining us.
Seth and James, I had so much fun. Thank you so very much. I will join you anytime. Now you're going to have a tough time getting rid of me.
Yeah, so okay. Oh. Yes. I guess we've done our job then. Yes.
Thank you, Jane. We appreciate you. When we come back, we're going to be speaking with Jane's sidekick. Greg Bach is going to join us here on Director's Cut. Welcome back to WFHR's Director's Cut, that is. We are being joined by Greg Bach from Matt and Air on the Air. You can hear Matt and Air on the Air Monday through Friday, 10 to noon. Greg, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me. And also, by the way, I just want to put, it's Matt and Air on Air. Let's stay on brand, everybody.
What did I say? Did I say
on
wrong?
On the air.
Matt and Air on Air. I apologize. Yeah. Greg, right out the gate, I want to get to know you. I want know a little bit about your origin story. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're from and how you got to this place?
Oh, yeah. So I'm born and raised in Wisconsin. I was born in Waukesha. Actually, WAUK, where we broadcast the show from, it's literally a mile from where I went to school. So I know this city real well, and I've always lived in Wisconsin. So, lived in Waukesha for the first couple decades of my life, then moved to Milwaukee and moved around southeastern Wisconsin. But I always made my way, I made my way back to Waukesha and always stayed here in Wisconsin because I really do love it. So
it's got to mean something a little extra to be able to work for, if you will, your hometown station.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, you know, once I left, it's not that I never came back, but I just never had a real reason to come back to Waukesha. Most of my friends have moved. My family doesn't live there anymore. And when working at WAUK, you get all these memories coming through. Like, oh, I used to hang out here. We would go hang out downtown Waukesha or school, go to this local record store and blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, it provides some great memories and really reinforces the Wisconsin and the Waukesha roots that I have, which is fantastic.
Nice.
Greg is not just a great co-host with Jane, but also a great comedian, does a lot of work in Wisconsin when it comes to that and promoting other comedians. What is it about comedy that called you, and when did you know that you wanted to be make people laugh?
Like a lot of comedians, I am a failed musician. And I played in bands from the age of 14 till about my mid-20s, and I'd always loved comedy growing up, like from a very young age. I mean, I remember watching, you know, Paula Poundstone, Ellen DeGeneres on TV, on HBO specials, Robert Klein, and I always thought, oh, I love comedy, but I never thought I could do it. And then I went to an improv show one time, and I was like, I want to learn this, and that was 2006, and I started taking lessons in improv, and then that just sort of morphed and evolved into doing sketch comedy, and then the last dragon to slay in the kingdom, which is stand-up. And stand-up is where I really, is where I feel the most comfortable, is standing on stage with a microphone in my hand telling jokes. And I honestly love connecting with people. I don't do raunchy material. I don't do heavily blue material. I mean, some of it might not be most appropriate for children, and I don't really swear that much on stage, but I really like connecting with people with my experiences. And if at anything, if they're having a tough day, they at least know someone on stage gets them and can connect and identify with what they're going through and make them laugh for anywhere between 5 to 35 minutes.
I've always, not always felt, I feel that comedy is the great equalizer. That rich, poor, yeah. Whatever connections you might have or don't have in life, everybody is going to, you know, find something funny or be able to relate to or something like that. It's really the, well, it's the essence of, it's not what they did, but why kings and queens had jesters, court jesters, is because everybody yeah. was supposed to be on the same field. Comedy is kind of actually, I think, come to that in many ways, as we see with really a lot of our most respected journalists, quote unquote, nowadays are comedians. Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert.
Oliver, yeah.
Yeah, so much of this, it kind of is built to that place. And I appreciate you noting that. How did you get into radio, Greg?
Well, I've always had a love for radio. I actually went, let me back that up a little. I've always loved radio, and I applied to radio school out of high school, and I ended up not going and sort of said, all right, well, you know, I have some friends in radio who've been working in the industry since they're like 15 years old, from internship to... Now they have their own shows around the area. And I was like, oh, that's not a thing I can ever do. And then a couple of years ago, I was asked to do a Wednesday co-host here at WAK for Civic Media. And then that turned into a producer's job. Then it turned into on-air hosting. And so it just sort of snowballed. And I've actually only been in radio professionally for about 1.5 years. And Every single day I come into work, I know that I am lucky, it is a privilege, and that there are a lot of other people out there who have worked 1,000 times harder, and I got a shot. So I make the most of it every time I'm on the air or, you know, just working, period. So.
Yeah, I've been in here about 20 years longer, Greg, and I'll tell you, I didn't go to school for this. I'm not even supposed to be here. I don't know how it happened. I feel the same thing you do every day I come into work and I get to turn that microphone on. I don't know who. I kind of feel like the inmates are running the asylum still. I still feel a little bit that, but you know, we'll keep moving. Greg, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Laughing Tap. Can you tell our audience yeah. about that?
The Laughing Tap is the only comedy club, I'm sorry, it's the only stand-up comedy club in the city of Milwaukee. We have been there since, located in Walker's Point on 5th Street, since January of 2020. So if you do the math, we had about 8 good weeks, and we shut down for 4 months, and then we slowly built ourselves up. But we made it through. We made it through with the donations and the love and support of our friends and families and other comedians, but we really wanted to provide a space where not only can people come and laugh, but comics can come and work, because I'm not sure if people are aware of this, but the comedy club model in at least America, I can't speak for the rest of the world, isn't really always based on the love of the art. It's more based on making money, which I understand, it's a business, got to stay open. But one thing we don't do is we don't censor our comics. They can talk about whatever they want to talk about. They can, some clubs will say, oh, don't talk about politics or don't talk about, no, we want people to be able to work within their art form and create what they want to create. Mm-hmm. But also we don't have a drink minimum. So that, you know, in and of itself, you walk in the door and if you want to just drink water, you can just drink water. And, you know, your night out on a level of your receipt at the end of the night can double when it comes to those things. And we don't want to do that. And we don't put that pressure on you. So you come in, we tell you right away, there's no drink minimums, have fun, just be cool, be respectful and have a good time. And we bring in some amazing, amazing artists from all over the world. So it's something we're very proud of. We've really built a home, a brick and mortar home for stand up in Milwaukee.
Right. And do you still try to showcase local talent as much as you can?
Absolutely. We try to make sure that our host, if not features, so for those who don't know the parlance, usually in a comedy club, there's a host, there's a feature, also known as a middler, and then a headliner. We try to make sure that at least one, if not both, of the headliner, I'm sorry, of the host and the feature are local. Sometimes the headliner will bring a feature, and sometimes our headliners will be local as well. But we want to make sure that people see that the talent that Wisconsin has to offer. And that's a very important point for us, because those are opportunities that they can take to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big part of what we wanted to do at Director's Cut, is feature local local talent, Wisconsin talent, artists, creatives, giving them an outlet. We started doing the show, wanted to talk to musicians and actors, and really expanded from mm-hmm. that to anybody we could get in a creative world right. on with the show. It's great to hear. I do want to encourage people to go to whether it's Facebook or going to the actual website, laughingtap.com, laughingtap.com, or typing it into your search bar in Facebook and liking their page, reaching out to Greg if you are a comedian out there and in the area and would like to be featured on there. Or keep in mind, they got a great show. When we're recording this is in early July. They got a show coming up July 14th, RNC Therapy. God, that sounds good. That's a great title, Greg.
I wish I could say I made it up myself, but I did not. But yeah, we're very excited to have this show come up this Sunday. We expect it to be a packed house and just a great time. Ben Palmer is incredibly funny, very, very well known on TikTok. I've followed him long before, you know, I think he opened the club. So it's just, we're super excited.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I was excited about, because this is the first time Greg and I have talked, mm-hmm. or any of us have talked to each other, really. One of the things I was excited about to talk with you, Greg, is because I saw a kinship with you in wanting to support artists and wanting to support other creatives and help promote them. And yeah. that's something that Seth and I can relate a lot to. So really do appreciate mm-hmm. you mentioning that and sharing the information with us. We are speaking with Greg Bach from Matinair On Air. There we go. God, there we go. We don't have to fix that one in post.
Don't worry, I'll fix it in post.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Greg, what about influences? Who have been some of your influences, whether it's entertainment or it's just in life in general?
I mean, as far as like entertainment, you know, my biggest stand-up influence is Patton Oswalt. He's the guy who...
Awesome.
Nice.
You know, there's something about him that, you know, there's a lot of comedians out there I don't want to come off sounding ageist, but as they get older, they produce less. They're not as funny as they used to be. They don't have as interesting ideas as they once did. But Patton, I think he's in his mid-50s at this point. Mm-hmm. He's still touring. He's still talking about his life and being funny and he's vibrant and he's alive and he's excited. And there's something about that really excites me because, you know, you can see a lot of comedians get on stage and go, well, back when I was younger, I'm like, I don't care about back when you were younger. Don't be upset with the younger generation. It's what happens. But he's one of those guys who, for me, you know, I could talk about influences all day comedy wise, but he's the one I'm always going to go to because he's also more story based. His joke structure and his word choices are fantastic. So, I mean, yeah, for me, you know, if I gotta start a Mount Rushmore, he's gonna be the first face on there for me.
Well, both James and I are huge Patton Oswalt fans. You know, it's funny you mentioned that, Greg, because he doesn't have to go tour anymore.
Yeah,
he's famous enough as he could just get acting jobs all day long, and he'd be fine. He wouldn't have to do it. But you are so right. His passion, his love for stand up in particular, is so obvious. And you're so right. That's what for me too. That's what draws me to him is that it's something he loves and he keeps doing just an amazing job with it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And he could easily phone it in on a Netflix special for $10 million mm-hmm. or whatever they're paying so-called comedians nowadays. Shots fired. What are you going to do about it?
Nothing. Come for us. Go ahead.
That's all right.
Bring it.
Yeah. But he, you know, I saw him at the comedy, at the club on State in Madison. You know, it's not a theater. It's not a stadium. It's not an arena. It's not a TV show. It's, you know, him in a room with like 250 other people. And he was on fire on the last show of the weekend too, where a lot of times the energy can lull. Mm-hmm. And he was crackling and sparkling. It was wonderful. So yeah, huge influence for me. And also I think the other thing too, is he's got a level of gratitude and grace about him that mm-hmm. I enjoy. You know, he could easily be bitter and all those things, but he's not. He's joyful and he's gracious and he appreciates the things he has. And that's influential as well. To me, it's not just about, you know, what they bring to the stage, but who are they off stage and how do they interact and, you know, how do they operate in this world? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I gravitate towards people who have grace and gratitude mm-hmm. and thanks. I mean, everyone has a bum day. Everyone can get grumbly and say, why didn't this happen for me? And but when you can, like I said, with radio, it's like there isn't a day that goes by that I do not thank the lucky stars to say, like, I was given this opportunity and I didn't have to. And so I got to make the most of it, because it could go away or it could go to someone else. And I, you know, I just, yeah, I really appreciate what civic media has brought to me, which is also a great, a bigger love for the state of Wisconsin than I've already had.
More on that in a moment. I do want to note, I want to say the first time I saw Patton Oswalt was like a night at the Improv on A&E or something like that. I don't know when it was. It might have been. But when I saw him, I'm like, okay, I'm going to be a fan of this guy the rest of my life. He's just my kind of funny. He's my kind of comedian. I didn't ever think that I would end up respecting and appreciating so much of the person. We didn't see a lot of that back in the day. And him sharing, especially with what he went through with his, with Michelle McNamara and his wife and everything.
Yeah. Yep.
Being so honest and open about that, and
amazing,
the work that they were able to do on that front, on that story, and it's so many levels to him that I appreciate. And I think you bring up an incredibly good point, Greg, about Seth and I talk about this from time to time about how comedy doesn't really age that well. So a lot of comedians, as they get older, they don't do as much work, or maybe as much current work or some of that. I've always admired those people that you can't tell their age. I was fortunate to see George Carlin on his last tour, or what we would be his last tour in Point. And I cannot, to this day, I cannot get over how that guy made every single one of us in that theater feel like we were alone with him in the room. How personal he was, how he made eye contact with people and everything. You don't see a lot of that stuff anymore. And I think that part of what stood out to me about him was not just all that, but the energy he had and the love he had for that audience. It goes a long ways.
Yeah, I agree. I think those are two very good examples of people who, you know, George until the end had a fire in his belly and a message to get out there. And Patton, I don't think he has as much of a message as George does, but has a fire and a love for the art that still comes across. And the thing, too, for me that really is an example as I get older, because I'm an older comic, I started older, is that watching him make commentary on stage about being older and understanding a changing world, rather than grumbling, griping, and telling younger people, no, you don't get it, or you're wrong, or you're bad. He says, I want to be better. I want to do better. I need to get better, and I need to understand the world around me and accept those changes and know that they are ultimately good, versus, you know, well, when I started doing comedy, you could do cocaine off the piano on stage, and now everything's changed, and I hate it. You know? So, like, that's another thing, too, is I love about him is, like, he's a guy who's growing. He's growing, and he's evolving, and there's not a lot, especially male comedians out there in their 50s and 60s, who want to do that. They want to just stay where they are, get worshipped as the idols that they've been told they are. And that's uninteresting to me, because then they stop saying interesting things on stage.
Yeah. Greg, just a couple more questions. We'll let you get going. I'm curious, especially considering you don't have a long career in radio or anything. You're coming into this a little bit fresher than some. What does it mean for you to work with civic media?
I mean, it's the opportunity is amazing, because, you know, we talk about conversations, we talk about connecting, we talk about being civic, having a civic mind, and being civil towards one another. And I think that's one of the things that this network really tries to nail down every day we're on the air is, you know, we have opinions and we put them out there, but we're not also selling conspiracy theories. We're not trying to, I don't know, it's hard. We just want to talk to you, and we want to hear from you, and we want to understand why you think the way you think, and tell you why we believe what we believe. And I think that this network really provides a platform, not just for us on the air, but for those who text and call and comment on a live stream. They all have the opportunity to make their voices heard, and we want to hear from them. And some of them don't agree with us, but we want to discuss why. And I think that is the ultimate selling point for me, is that, you know, I'm not going to take a caller who disagrees with me and then tell them they're wrong or make fun of them or hang up on them. I'm going to say, all right, tell me why you think the way you do. Mm-hmm. Where's your proof? Show your work. But I want to respect you for your opinions. And I think that's something that civic media does really well. And we're building on that across the state. And we hear that from people who listen.
Yeah, I don't like to ask anybody a question that I can't answer. So I like to ask myself these questions. And when I came to this one, I wasn't sure. I couldn't put in the words what it means. I think you put it very well, Greg. I appreciate that. Your final question, then we can let you get on to your day and move on. We like to ask every one of our guests this one. If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why?
I would have coffee with Malcolm X.
Ooh.
Nice.
Oh, that's a good one.
And no hesitation. I think that's the first time. Right away, answer the question.
Yeah.
Wow, nicely done.
Good job.
That's a fantastic one. One of my bigger influences, especially when it comes to not only Malcolm's message and what he did, but we've been talking a lot, not intentionally maybe, but a lot about the growth and the arc of a human being. Malcolm's has one of the most interesting in life.
Fascinating.
When you look at towards where he was, when he became in the public eye, and then as he ended his life going to Mecca and discovering, oh, there are people of different skin that pray to the same God as I do. Maybe I've been approaching this wrong. And the ability to admit that and talk about that. I think almost every other day I think about what it would be like in this day and age if we still had individuals like that. That's a great answer. Why did you choose him?
I mean, that's the reason. Honestly, what you said was what I feel about him when I think about him every day. And I do, because he's one of the most influential people for me, and not for what, you know, I don't come from his background. I don't share the same skin color. I don't share the same religion as him. What I do share is that desire to always be able to look at myself and say, is what I believe the right path for me? Am I getting the best information to lead me to a better and more joyous life? And if I am, great. If not, I have to be able to recognize it, accept new information, and move on. And also, not only that, but make amends to those you may have hurt in the past with those opinions. And he, you know, could easily walk the earth as whomever he wanted to be as far as like a religious figure, but he didn't see himself as that. He saw himself as an instrument of a higher message. Now, I don't share that higher message as he does, but I'm a person who walks upon the earth, and I believe we have a mission to connect, and I can't connect properly if I'm coming with a bunch of misinformation or disinformation.
Couldn't agree with you more, Greg. Great points right there. There is a quote from Malcolm that I wanted to just throw out there real quick. I should get this right. There is no better teacher than adversity. Every defeat, every heartbreak, every loss contains its own seed, its own lesson on how to improve your performance the next time. I've lived on that. The another thing he's always said, that the slums are not born in you. Just because you are born in the slums doesn't mean the slums are born in you. As a kid from the South Side, that meant a lot to me, hearing that. And there's so many personable quotes about him that I think if you give it a chance, you can find out. A really incredibly amazing human being.
Yeah.
That was a great choice. Yeah. I got to be honest with everybody. I didn't see that one coming. So I was completely stumbling.
Should have seen the look on his face when you said that, man. It was really great. He was like, whoa.
I was so excited. I was so excited that I answered the question for you, and I apologize for doing that, Craig.
I got to say, that's one of the best coffee answers we've had. You know, we've got all kinds of great people and stuff, but Greg, man, you nailed it. That was awesome.
Really appreciate the time, Greg. This was a lot of fun. You might have to join us again, though. It was too much fun. You might have to join us again.
Well, let me know, and I'm there, my friends.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you, Greg. Take care.
All right. Take it easy, guys. Bye.
Keep in mind, everybody, you can join us for Matt and Air on Air with Jane and Greg Monday through Friday, 10 to noon, right here at WFHR. We'll be back with another Civic Series Director's Cut coming up on WFHR. And welcome back to Director's Cut, everybody. I want to thank Jane and Greg for joining us. It was a really fun time talking with them. Be on the lookout for more of the Civic Series, where we're going to be interviewing more of the Civic media personalities, along with our own staff around here.
Yeah.
We're looking to get Pam and Chuck, Tim, you, Melissa, Laura, all interviewed, and certainly other personalities.
Yes. Got to get Sage on the show.
Yeah, that's the other one, yeah.
I want to learn more about his background. I think people would be really interested in that.
That's a big one. That's a big fish. We're getting that one. We're hooking that one. But Seth and I thought a fun way to kind of wrap up the show was going in a little different direction. There's a lot of weird things celebrities put in their contracts that don't necessarily get talked about a lot. In recent news, it came out about Tom Cruise. He has a clause in his movie contract stating that his likeness can't be used on merchandise.
Okay.
It's a big deal to him. No action figures of Tom. None of that kind of thing.
Just real quick. Who doesn't want an action figure made of them? That would be so cool.
It's a little silly. Plus, yeah, I mean, a Magnolia, action figure would have been really cool. It'd be really interesting.
Oh, brother.
But he's not alone. There are plenty of other actors that have done this, and we're going to go through some of the more fun ones out there. Like, I think that it's just hilarious what has happened with the Fast and the Furious movies. The Rock, Jason Statham, and Vin Diesel all refused to be depicted as the loser in any fight. So, Diesel devised a point system based on the number of kicks, punches, and headbutts each of them delivered and received.
Oh, my. Really?
Like, he put time and energy into this.
Oh, my gosh. What? That seems a little over the top.
You talk about, like, over the top machismo, man. Yeah. Like, it's a
movie.
Come
on, guys. It's a movie.
You guys realize we don't think that any of you actually won or lost a fight. Like, they're worried about...
Or actually fighting, you know?
Yeah,
for
exactly.
that matter. Like, it's choreographed.
Come on. I understand that we got to believe these movies. You don't necessarily need to believe them that much.
Please don't, actually.
Barbara Streisand has long been talked about some of her contract things.
Yeah.
And as she has gotten older and older, they've only gotten more diva-esque. She demands peach-colored toilet paper to match her skin tone and rose petals in the toilet bowl.
Wait.
I got nothing. I don't even know where to go with that.
Skin color? Why?
Imagine being an intern and you're running around all over the city trying to find this.
What? There is no peach colored. Is there? Like, maybe I missed something. I don't know.
I respect Ms. Streisand's talent
sure.
and her legacy. What the what, man? Like, come on.
That's
come
too much.
On.
Too much. The rose petals? What a waste.
I would be embarrassed to put that in a contract. Like, I would say it out loud and I'd be like, oh my God. Hey, no, don't go through. Please don't tell anybody I said that. Like that. I can't believe I'm saying this, but that kind of like takes her down a notch for me.
It's ridiculous.
Weird way, but it's so ridiculous that it's like, what are
it's
you doing?
It's so out there, you know?
One of my, to be fair, to play go to the other side of this, I've got a couple of my favorite actors on this list too.
Of course.
Like Samuel Jackson, who demands time off to play golf twice a week. He also makes sure, and it's in his contract, that he doesn't have to do a second take if he thinks he nailed it on the first take.
Now that's interesting.
Ooh,
wow.
Yeah, that is... there's two angles on that for me because one, as an actor, that actors have not had a lot of control over their careers or their project. Oftentimes in their careers, I love hearing an actor take some initiative and take some responsibility for this too. While at the same time, the directors are oftentimes in a very similar position,
right?
And it's kind of tough to take that creative out of their hands.
Yeah, Samuel Jackson is great. You know, I'm sure he's very professional when he's on the set and everything like that, but. You don't always know when you get the right take.
Yeah.
And, that's why there's a director there to make sure. It's like, why don't we try it like this? Or why don't we do it like this? That one's a little bit overboard. The golf thing, that's like a time-honored thing, man.
Yeah.
Bing Crosby used to do that thing. He'd like sneak out to play golf on the set.
Great.
Don't need me
Great
anymore?
Note.
Okay, I'm gone.
We appreciate you all listening and spreading the word about this show. Keep in mind that if you miss any of our shows, you can catch it at civicmedia.us.
Mm-hmm.
And be on the lookout for not only more of the Civic series that we're doing here, but we're going to have our friends from CWAC and WRCT on.
Yep.
And we want to have you on. If you are a creative, if you know of a creative, spread the word. Let us know. Hit either Seth or I up at our emails, james.mailoff@civicmedia.us, seth.habhager@civicmedia.us.
Mm-hmm.
We want all of the creatives in this whole area on, but before we're done, have them all on the show.
That'd be great.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. Be on the lookout for another new episode of Director's Cut coming up right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.